From historic Seminary Ridge in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, this is The Seminary Explores. Conversations about people, politics, theology, and life with your host, Dr. Gerald Christensen.
She has spent a nearly lifelong career in women's reproductive rights, women's equality, and reproductive choice, and she's our guest today to tell us about how she got into this business in the first place and where we still have to go as a nation. Hello, I'm Jerry Christensen, and this is The Seminary Explores. If you haven't guessed already, our guest, and it's a great privilege to say this, Kate, our guest is Kate Michaelman, who is the author of With Liberty and Justice for All, A Life Spent Protecting the Right to Choose. It was published in around 2005 by Hudson Street Press and is available online or at your favorite bookstore. For 20 years, she was president of NARAL, N-A-R-A-L, Pro-Choice America, and before that, around 10 years in Planned Parenthood. And now that I've given all of this, there's no more time to talk. Yeah. I'm sure I could go the entire 20 minutes on your career. Tell us how you got into women's reproductive rights. Where did all that's one of my favorite questions on the show. How did people get into what they're doing right now?
First of all, thank you for having me, Jerry. And it's my privilege to be here, too. I'm very honored. And so I think it's, we never quite prepare ourselves for...
Life happens,
but there are times when we have events in our lives which change the nature and the course of our lives and awaken us to things we never considered. In my case, it goes back to 1969. I was married to a college professor. We had just started out. We were married very young. I had three little girls, 1 year apart, right away. Our first position was at Penn State. And unfortunately, after being there just a short time, it turns out that my husband fell in love with another woman and walked out on my girls and me. And when he left us really without anything. Because I was a stay-at-home mom. I had three little girls, ages 2, 3, and 4 at the time. And we had no resources at all. We had just finished our work in university. And it was devastating. It changed. I mean, it was a devastating time of our lives. It was an upheaval I could never have experienced and never could have planned for. I fell out of aspiring middle class to poverty right away. I had no income. I had to go on welfare and food stamps. I had no support. My husband did not give us any kind of economic help at all. And a few weeks after my husband left, I discovered that I was pregnant again. And that discovery
Devastating.
It was just devastating, yes. Mm-hmm. And being a Catholic woman, I never considered abortion. In fact, I didn't even use birth control until after my third daughter was born. And as many women experienced in those early days of birth control, I had a lot of problems with the hormones and couldn't really take them, which is probably why, even though I was very careful, I got pregnant again. Anyway, discovering after my husband left us and we were in this terrible situation that I was pregnant, and I looked at my three daughters and knew that I couldn't give my three born daughters all that they needed, because I never contemplated being a single mom. But now I knew I was all they had, at least it felt that way, and it turned out to be that way. And that to have another child would have been irresponsible. So I decided, not knowing anything about abortion, but I looked into it very quietly. I learned it was illegal. But I became committed to not having another child so that I could be the mother I needed to be for my daughters. And I had to get a job, and I had to, you know, I just couldn't afford it either, to be quite honest. Totally impossible for me at the time. Anyway, I found that it was illegal. I was told that I had two choices. I could arrange to have an illegal abortion, meaning I would be picked up in a darkened windowed car, taken to a room where an abortion provider, whether but it wasn't sure he'd be...
They would be licensed even.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. That there were rumors and stories about women having really serious problems. And then, of course, I heard stories about women dying.
Mm-hmm.
So I got so scared. Again, my children, I couldn't do that. I didn't feel I could do that. The other option was that I could apply to the hospital for a therapeutic abortion. Now, to be granted permission to have a therapeutic abortion, I had to be judged by the hospital panel of men that I was unfit to be a mother. They had to make it. They had to decide that I, the only way I could have an abortion was to say that I was emotionally disturbed. I was unfit to have a pregnancy. I went through two rounds of interrogation all by myself in this hospital, totally alone in the context of this terrible time in my life. Finally, the hospital agreed to allow me to have a termination. I got into the hospital all by myself, haven't told anybody because in those days it was illegal, so you were committing a crime, or at least you were felt like you were committing a crime, and so I kept everything to myself. I was embarrassed. I was ashamed. I was not ashamed about why I needed to terminate this pregnancy. I knew I had a developing life in me. I had three children. No one had to tell me that I had a developing life. But what I also knew was that I had three lives that were no longer in me. They were on their own, and they needed me to help them. So anyway, I got into the hospital all by myself. I was in the room. Nurse said, get your hospital gown on. I did. She came back with a chart in her hand. She said, Kate, I'm sorry, but we have a problem. We forgot one more important requirement, and we can't do your termination today. You have to have the written permission of your husband before you can have this termination. I said,
no,
my husband,
no, you tell me.
My husband left me.
Mm-hmm.
I can't now go to my husband and ask him for permission. She said, you can't terminate this without his permission. We were not yet divorced, of course.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to get dressed, leave the hospital, go find my husband, have him write a note that I had to bring back to the hospital, like a child in a school bringing a note to the teacher.
Mm-hmm.
It was humiliating and degrading. Further, it was just, it was a degradation of, and...
It's emotional as well as, but most important, it was economic.
It was everything. It was economic. It was emotional. It was my children were at stake and their well-being. And, of course, having this experience, I had the abortion.
Mm-hmm.
And that was in 1969. And it awakened in me a realization of how the society oppressed women. That not only did I have no right to decide for myself how I could best be responsible for my daughters, and if I had a pregnancy that wasn't right for me, that I terminated that pregnancy. I didn't have the right. The state said I could not decide that, and I had to go through humiliation. And if I'd chosen the back alley abortion, it would have been a risk to my life.
Mm-hmm.
And a risk to my daughter's lives because they could have had a mother who died. That along with all the economic oppression that I experienced after being a single mom, not being able to get a job because I was low income, not being mm-hmm. able to get a job because I was no longer married. I was turned down for a job. All of these things, this entire experience, really radicalized me and created a passion for wanting to work in this society on behalf of women's rights so that no woman would ever have to experience mm-hmm. these degradations again. And I wasn't one of these women who was anti-male. Not at all. I wanted, my vision is that women and men be partners in the world, that we offer different things, we're equal in our value. But women are discriminated against still today, not only in reproductive rights. We're losing our right to choose state by state, even now, 40 years after Roe v. Wade recognized a woman's right to decide. We are now losing our right to choose state by state. There are more laws humiliating women, especially young women, poor women, working class women. They're humiliated, humiliated still to this day. And some can't even get a termination. And still we have not equal pay for women. We still have sexual assaults on women that are not taken seriously. We are still, you know, judged as less competent. Mm-hmm. But I believe that reproductive freedom and choice, the right to decide when, whether, and what, under what circumstances to be a parent, is fundamental to the rest of a woman's life, to her educational life, to her ability to work, to her ability to be a mother, to ability to plan a family and make sure that that family is secure. So I choose to work on reproductive health and reproductive rights because I see it as fundamental to women's equality.
I'm Jerry Christensen, and you're listening to the Seminary Explorers with our guest, Kate Michaelman, who has spent a career in women's equality and reproductive choice. She is the author of a book which will fill out much of the story that you've just heard and the remainder of her career, called With Liberty and Justice for All, A Life Spent Protecting the Right to Choose. You've just hinted at some of the things we still need to work on. Do you think, all in all, it sounded like we're going backward a bit since Roe v. Wade, but were there some gains since then, and have there been some setbacks? In short, what do we mostly need to address today? And is it just tinkering with the law, or is it more in the realm of helping people to understand themselves, for example, better education, mm-hmm. better understanding about what sex and marriage reproduction are all about.
Right.
That was a long statement.
It should
have been a question.
Yeah, but it was a very informed statement because it's exactly right on. In terms of the first part of your question, where are we today, given that 40 years ago or so, Roe versus Wade Supreme Court decision recognized a woman's fundamental right to decide whether or not to have an abortion, whether or not to have a child. That right, however, has been weakened over time. In 1992, in a case right out of our state here in Pennsylvania, the court narrowed the right, lessened the protections that the right had. As a fundamental right, you have the highest standard of protection as individuals. Our right to privacy, our right to religious freedom, our right to free speech, they're all fundamental rights. But the right to choose was found to be a fundamental right within the right to privacy. That changed in 1992 because of a case out of Pennsylvania that challenged that right. Mm-hmm. So we have fewer protections. States are now allowed to legislate and regulate and restrict women's options and women's right to health care and women's rights to abortion, to contraception, etc. And so over the years, since 1992, states all across the country, states have layered one obstacle a woman has to go through in order to exercise her right to have an abortion or her right to contraception. More recently, the anti-abortion, the anti-choice movement has made it very clear that they're not just about criminalizing abortion and forcing women into back alleys again. They want to deny women the right to contraception as well, because they don't believe that women should be having babies, or that I don't want to. I do believe many on the other side feel very strongly morally that abortion is wrong, and I really respect their right to believe that. What I what we can't allow them to do, and they have the right to preach about that in their churches, to teach their own beliefs. What they don't have a right to do is to impose that belief through law on every single woman under every single circumstance. Mm-hmm. In my circumstance, I was a Catholic woman. I had three babies. I did what I, but I also knew it was wrong then to have a fourth child when I was in poverty. And so the states have moved against a woman's right to choose. It is harder in many states today for a woman to access her need for health care, abortion care, than it was right before Roe v. Wade. Much harder than for many women. So my frustration has been that I think the most important thing that we can do as a nation is to work on making abortion less necessary.
Ah, yes. I see.
Women don't have abortions because they plan to. We don't grow. I have three daughters. I didn't grow them up to say, now you need to get pregnant and so you can have an abortion for that experience. That's not the way we do. That's not what it is. Mm-hmm. It is a personal part of our journey as women. Reproductive matters, whether it be birth control, pregnancy, termination, in vitro fertilization. All of these matters are very deeply personal, but they affect the totality of our lives. I believe that we should, as a nation, invest in prevention of unintended pregnancy through good quality sex education, real education for men and women to know how to handle themselves in these matters, making absolute access to contraception really widely known about and widely available and free, as far as I'm concerned. And also for women who want to have children. This is the fallacy of all these people who didn't want to deny women the right to decide are not people who join with us in work to make it possible for women who want to have children to have healthy pregnancies and to have the supports necessary when their child is born to be successful. They don't like Head Start. They don't like feeding programs for young, poor women. They don't like after-school programs. They don't want to spend money. So once a baby is born, these people disappear. Mm-hmm. So I think for both women who want to have children, we need as a society to make that possible. Give women the supports. For women who find themselves pregnant when they didn't expect to be and have to decide about whether or not they can continue that pregnancy, they need to have the dignity and the right and the respect to do so and have the health care. For younger people, they need to understand how sexual intimacy is a matter to be treated respectfully. And if they decide they're going to get involved in sexual practice, sexual intimacy, they have got to take responsibility for not getting pregnant, and they need to know about that, and they need to have access. There's so much more we can do.
Self-dignity, a sense of self and worth, especially among teenagers, the use of sex as a way of getting, just getting to have friends, to have people who respect
and who like you.
And yeah, I want people to like me, so let's have sex.
Exactly. And for many, many girls who are in poverty or or see a life with no options. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're in a situation where their mothers have been beaten down by the society, by being unlucky enough to be born into a no options situation. These girls see sometimes pregnancy as their only way out. Mm-hmm. We've got to change that.
Yeah.
Young people need to have options and know that delaying childbearing until we at least can think about it carefully and act on it intelligently and with maturity. Because having a child, you know, you hear this, it's sort of like a cliche anymore, but I stand by it to this day. Having a child is the most important thing one will ever do in one's life. I don't care whether you are a nuclear scientist, whether you discover cure to cancer, whether you, which are all, you know, I don't care what you do. Bringing up human beings in this world is the most important ingredient to a healthy society, a healthy world. And we got to do it with intelligence and respect and maturity. And so we need to be readier. Mm-hmm. Readier. More ready. So it's just we're on the wrong we spend our time on negative aspects, you know. Mm-hmm. And I do believe, as I said earlier, that people have a right to disagree. Well, because abortion has philosophical, ethical challenges to them. These questions about abortion are really, for many, very challenging. They were for me. This was an ethical, moral decision, and even a religious one. My belief, though, is who gets to decide the answers to those questions? Is it the state, the politicians, the judges, or is it an individual woman in the context of her life, her family, her religion? And does she get to decide? That's, to me, the central question. Who decides?
Kate Michaelman is our guest today. It's been a great privilege to have her. She has spent her entire career in women's equality and reproductive choice. I'm Jerry Christensen for the Seminary Explorers, and I'm recommending that you look at her book with Liberty and Justice for All to get her side of the story. I'm Jerry Christensen, and for the Seminary Explorers, have a very good day.
You've been listening to The Seminary Explores from historic Seminary Ridge in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, a production of the Lutheran Theological Seminary at Gettysburg. We invite you to visit our website at www.ltsg.edu. All opinions expressed on this program are those of the individual speakers and are not necessarily those of Gettysburg Seminary or the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America.